My name is Roshan, and I work in the data team at LinkedIn. And I'm going to be talking about a system that we built at LinkedIn called Voldemort, and in particular, how we extended it to serve various data products that we have at LinkedIn. To start off with, let me talk about LinkedIn. For people who are totally cut off from the social web, we are the largest online social professional network. We have about 150-odd million members, and we're growing at a steady rate at about 2 members joining in per second. The core proposition of LinkedIn is that we allow our members to create professional profiles and then connect with like-minded professionals. So if you don't have a profile, you should definitely have one. So being a part of the data team at LinkedIn, it's our job to try to take these profiles and the social graph and try to extract some sort of insights for our users. This actually helps as far as engagement is concerned. It helps to drive the complete site traffic. So here are a couple of examples of some of the features that we have on LinkedIn. Let me deep dive into one particular feature. It's called People You May Know. What People You May Know is primarily a recommendation product wherein we try to recommend people that you want to connect with. Like all the other data features that I mentioned in the previous slide, all of these data features are basically run by like some sort of machine learning algorithm, and they're generally batch-oriented algorithms. So you take a snapshot of the complete social graph of professionals and you try to run some sort of iterative algorithm on top of it. And since LinkedIn is a heavy user of MapReduce, in particular Hadoop, we write most of our algorithms in MapReduce. So what are the characteristics of the output of these algorithms? So I mentioned four of them on the slide. The most important one is that the output is large. It's really massive. It's in terabytes of data that you're generating to serve to the live traffic. It's immutable. For the People You May Know example, you can see that the data would primarily be the key would be a member ID and a value would be a list of recommended members. So it's pretty immutable. You don't really need to make any changes to before you serve it to the live traffic. Obviously, it follows a key value sort of model. So as I said, for People You May Know, key is member ID, value is a list of recommended members. And the most important characteristic is that since our social graph keeps changing very dynamically, the output of the algorithm changes a lot. So in most scenarios, we really don't need incremental sort of updates. We really want to completely refresh the full key space of the data feature. So that is the most important the characteristic of the output. So what does this boil down to? We have a massive data set that we want to serve to our ever-increasing member base of 150 million members. So this is going to be the focus of my talk. So primarily at LinkedIn, we end up building a distributed key value store. It's called Voldemort. And then it was initially supposed to be for a particular use case, and then we extended it to support these batch massive data sets that you can bulk load into. So let me start off by giving you some features of our system. First of all, it's fast. It is fast, available, and elastic. Since we rely on a couple of years of research in distributed key value stores, it has to be fast because we have to serve to the live traffic because people click on it and you show them recommendation. It has to be available because you don't want downtime in cases a particular node is down. It has to be elastic because obviously member base is increasing, people are coming to our site more often, so you want to be able to make this distributed key value store as scalable as possible. The second feature of our system is that it is we can bulk load really massive data sets. We saw a lot of these serving systems already there in production in various companies, and the problem that most of them face is that people try to bulk load into them using the same index which is serving the live traffic. So that causes a lot of performance problems. We try to solve that problem by completely offloading the index construction to a processing system, which in our case is Hadoop. That's another novelty of our system. The third most important feature for our system is that we want to try to minimize time and error. Let me give you some motivation behind this. Since we iterate on our data features a lot, there are times that engineers write bad algorithms and they ship out bad data to the site. Now, what happens in that scenario is, say people you may know, we push out a bad data, a bad algorithm, you're going to get bad recommendations on your site. So we want the ability to quickly roll back to a good state or a state in which the recommendations were good. So that is another important feature that our system provides. It allows you to quickly roll back to a good state. The third most important point, since we're a growing company, it should be easy to actually build these data features. So we try to do this by having some sort of configuration file that the engineer writes. So in this example, we're just mentioning the input path, which is the output of the algorithm, and saying push it to this store called people you may know, push it to this table called people you may know, and he's pushing it to a testing cluster. And the minute he's ready, all he needs to do is just change the configuration file to production, and he's pushing it to live site. And the best part about our project is that it's open source, so you can go to projectwaldemar.com and fork the project and send us patches if you're willing to. So here's a roadmap of my talk. I'm going to start off by talking about Waldemart because the paper was not about Waldemart. Waldemart was a key value store which was initially built. We later extended it to serve these massive data sets. I'll talk about each and every point that each and every goal that we want to achieve through this new storage engine that we added, and end the talk with some performance numbers. So let me start off by talking about Waldemart. Waldemart is inherently Amazon Dynamo's claw. So if you haven't read this paper, there was a paper in 2007 from Amazon wherein they described a distributed key value store that they wrote for their shopping cart system. So we literally cloned that and we built an open source project. It's distributed, it's key value store, it follows the eventual consistency model. The way we wrote it was we wrote it as separate modules, and it's a pretty pluggable architecture, so you can plug in a particular layer and push in a new one very easily. And when we wrote this about 3 years back, it was primarily written for read-write storage engines, so that in this example, we cater to MySQL and BDB being the single node storage engines. So let me give you a little bit of background about what Waldemart is. So it has multiple nodes since it's distributed. Each node is a peer. There's no master slave. On every node, we have something called stores. Stores map to database tables, if you want to keep it that way. A feature on the site can but map to multiple stores. The store is there on each and every box, obviously. Every store has a separate replication factor, wherein every key in that store is replicated n number of times, where n is configurable. This gives you availability. A store is further split up into something that we call logical partitions. What is a logical partition? Well, we hash the key in a particular store into this ring structure, and we split the ring into a certain number of partitions, and we assign partitions to nodes. So in this example, you can see the ring has been split up into 6 partitions, and 3 of them have been assigned to node 0, 3 to node 1. And this ring is done on every store has a different ring. So if there are 2 stores, it'll be 2 different rings. So when we build this system, we build it for read-write storage engines, and we decided, hey, let's write our data features in Hadoop, let's write our algorithms in Hadoop, and try to ship the output into Waldemart. So here at the top, we have our processing system, which is Hadoop in our scenario. And the way we would try to bulk load this massive output that would be generated from Hadoop was that we'd first copy it onto the individual nodes of Waldemart into a staging location. And MySQL has the ability to bulk load in the form of a statement called load data. Or even BDB, Berkeley DB has its own statement. The big problem of this approach is obviously the latency degradation that you're going to have since you are bulk loading into the same index that is serving the live traffic from the bottom. So we were like, hey, let's try to move the index construction to a completely different system. So the second approach that we tried was like we replicated all the nodes. We do bulk loading on a completely different cluster, wherein we keep a one-to-one mapping of the nodes, and we bulk load into that cluster. And once it's bulk loaded, we take the output of it and store it and push it onto another table on the live cluster. And we keep some sort of view which toggles between the two. So in this scenario, we'll first bulk load onto the top cluster, which will then copy its results into T2, which is another table. And then live traffic will be served from T1. And once we are ready, we'll just swap the links over, and we'll say, you bulk load into T1. Pretty simple idea. The big problem of this is now we have to maintain another cluster with exactly the same number of nodes, same number of configuration. It's really a pain. It's an operational pain to really maintain a separate cluster to do this. So the next approach we tried was like, hey, why not just move the index construction into Hadoop? I mean, we're doing processing there. We're generating our algorithm. Let's just move it completely into Hadoop. So what we did was we added one extra MapReduce step, and in the reduce phase, we primarily generate these single node outputs. So as you can see, every reducer basically writes to its local file system. Then we take the data from the local file system of the reducer, copy it onto HDFS from where, HDFS is, by the way, a Hadoop distributed file system. And then from there, we do this toggle mechanism on our live cluster. Now, the big problem of this is obviously you're doing a lot of copying. Your reducer is writing to your local file system. Your local file system is you're copying it into HDFS, and from HDFS, you're replicating it, and then you're copying it to Voldemort. If you're dealing with terabytes of data, this does not scale. So we decided to take a step back. We're like, hey, we've written this beautiful code which is pluggable. We can plug in new storage engines. Why not just write a new storage engine which has a couple of properties? One, it does not result in any impact on the live system. Two, you can quickly roll back if you're stuck in a bad state. Fast lookups, obviously, because that's what the system is all about. And easy rebalancing because you want to scale the system. So I'll talk about each and every one of these points. So let me start off with the minimal impact point on a live system. So we went back and we looked at all our data features, and we saw that most of them have a very similar pipeline. It basically starts with we read data from HDFS, which is the Hadoop distributed file system. We'll do some sort of transformation through some jobs. So we'll write a couple of MapReduce jobs, and then we'll store it back into a Hadoop file system, which will finally be then shipped over to our serving system. We said, hey, let's add one more step, which is the construct store step, which will take the output of whatever is the which will take the output of the Hadoop flow and do some sort of transformation and make a store out of it. So the next question you may ask me is, what exactly is this construct store step? So this construct store step is one single MapReduce job that we run at the end of every data features pipeline. What it does is it takes as its input in the mapper phase the output of the algorithm that was being run, and it forks out the key values that are generated replication factor number of times, which I already defined is on a per store basis. We write a custom partitioner which redirects the keys onto a particular reducer, and reducer gets some sort of stickiness. It gets some sort of stickiness wherein reducers start writing onto HDFS in per Voldemort node basis. So basically, every Voldemort node will have a particular folder in HDFS for it to pull from. So now the next question is, what exactly are you storing in these Voldemort nodes? These folders for Voldemort nodes. So we went back and we thought about a store. We have split it up into logical partitions. That is the way Dynamo did it. We further decided, let's split these partitions into something that we call chunk sets. What is a chunk set? So obviously a chunk set maps to a particular reducer. So a reducer in that MapReduce job will write to a particular chunk set. What is a chunk set? A chunk set is a combination of an index and a data file. And the beauty of this structure is that you'll see that the index file primarily is sorted by the MD5 of the key. Now, if you know MapReduce, you know that in your reduce step, the keys come in a sorted fashion. And in our case, we pass the key as the MD5 of the key. So as far as the reduce phase is concerned, it's literally just an append to this index and data file because they're coming in sorted fashion. And now these files are obviously generated and stored onto HDFS. Now that we've understood this full index construction, we've totally solved the problem of doing index construction on the live traffic, and we've moved it to Hadoop. Let's talk a little bit about rollback. For rollback purposes, let's try to understand the complete pipeline that every store will go through. So now this full pipeline is run by multiple stores multiple number of times in a day. We have some sort of driver program which first goes and triggers the MapReduce job that I already mentioned. It takes the output of the algorithm, runs the construct store step. Once that's done, it stores the output into HDFS in the per node folders. Then the driver program goes to Voldemort and tells Voldemort, hey, why don't you go to this location in HDFS and every node individually pull your data. And pull your data in the sense, pull your chunk sets. Why do we go for a pull model instead of a push model here? Because it makes it easy for Voldemort to throttle the pulls in case we start seeing some sort of latency on the site. So now the next question is, where do we store it on the Voldemort cluster? So since I mentioned that we end up building our own storage system, so we decided to keep a pretty simple structure on the file system. We keep a folder for every store. So in this case, we have some store one, and we have a folder called store one. Inside every store, we basically keep multiple versions of the data. And since every version corresponds to a particular pull of the data you had done, so in this case, we're keeping two versions, version I and version I plus one. And we also keep a symbolic link latest, which points to the version which is actually serving the live traffic. So when the time comes to pull the data, Voldemort will start a version I plus two, which is a completely new directory, and pull the data into that. Once that is done, once all the nodes have completed pulling the data, we do a swap. The way the swap works is we basically close all the index files of version I plus one, and then we memory map the indexes of version I plus two, which was the new one that we recently pulled. So the end state will look something like this. You basically closed I plus one, changed the symbolic link for latest to say that now we're serving traffic from I plus two, and I plus two's indexes are memory mapped. In case of a failure scenario now, so the first three steps were obviously in a normal scenario. We'll keep running this pipeline every day. But suddenly some operation guy realizes, oh, there was a bad push. So he will go and trigger the rollback step, which in this case is pretty simple now because you have a backup of the data. You just change the symbolic link to version I plus one from I plus two, and you memory map I plus one's indexes. So the final state looks something like this. You basically change your symbolic link and you've memory mapped the indexes from I plus one. The beauty of this whole operation is on about 25 node cluster, this takes about 0.05 milliseconds. So it's pretty fast. Awesome. So now once you've done your swap, you want to look up some key value, right? So that's pretty simple. You basically go to a particular partition. You know which partition it is because we hash the key into that ring. We go to a particular chunk set. Once we find the chunk set, we have its corresponding index and data file. We do a binary search in the index because it's sorted. You can do a quick binary search and then go to corresponding location in the data file and look up the key and value pretty fast. We did a couple of optimizations out here, like we took the upper 8 bytes of MD5 and we allowed collisions. That was primary. The 8 bytes is a configurable value. You could have n bytes. The reason why we came up with 8 bytes, and we've explained it in the paper, is because we saw that generally our stores are keyed by member ID, and the collision that you'll get by just storing top 8 bytes is like one. The probability of getting a collision is very small. So that's lookup. So lookups are pretty fast out here as well. Rebalancing, that's another important feature. The way we do rebalancing is instead of splitting up these chunk sets, we decide, hey, rebalancing should only be done by changing the ownership of the partition to a new node. The next question that comes to my mind is, why do we do rebalancing? Well, because over time, the data-to-memory ratio keeps getting skewed, so we start seeing some performance problems. So we want to keep adding new nodes. And the way we add the new nodes is we change the ownership of a partition to a new node. And once we change the ownership of the partition, all we have to do is move the corresponding chunk sets in that partition to the new node. It's literally a copy the file over operation, which is pretty fast as well. So that was rebalancing. Now let me talk a little bit, give you some performance numbers as to how our system performs. I'll talk about single node latencies, multi node latency, and I'll throw some production numbers at you guys. Single node latency. So the way we wanted to compare this with MySQL, because that is one of the most popular serving systems. So here is a single node MySQL instance. As you can see that, as far as the median latency is concerned, we are able to scale to twice the number of queries per second. Oh, by the way, so this is all run on 100 gigs of data with about 4:1 data to memory ratio. So we're able to scale to like twice the number of queries per second while maintaining about the same median latency. And as far as the 99th percentile is concerned, we're pretty good compared to MySQL. Similarly, we decided to do a multi-node comparison. So we ran this on a 32-node cluster. The x-axis is the size of the data in terabytes. So that is the amount of data that we had, and obviously we have 32 nodes. And we tried two different request distributions. We tried Uniform and we tried Ziffian. It's pretty intuitive that Ziffian gives you a better characteristics due to the cacheability of the key. But as you can see that as data size increases, our latency is able to scale linearly. Finally, let me give you some numbers for people you may know. So people you may know, I guess, has been running in production for about 2 years now. The x-axis is the wall clock time. At about 20-odd minutes, we do a swap to a new, so a pull has completed, and we're going to do a swap. Now, when you do a swap, obviously, the indexes are not in memory. They slowly get warmed up. Thanks to binary search, it goes and touches all over the index, so it gets warmed up pretty fast. So it takes about an hour and a half to get the whole index warmed up on a 25-node cluster. And the latencies are always less than 3 or 4 milliseconds. Which is pretty good. Finally, some related works. We did some comparisons with a couple of shared nothing databases, or the as the new term is NoSQL systems. We started off with Peanuts, which is a pretty awesome piece of work. Peanuts from Yahoo folks tried to do bulk loading into range partition tables. The way they did that was primarily by adding an extra. They call it planning phase before they do the bulk load. But those are primarily optimizations to avoid tampering your index, your live index. You're basically doing an extra phase just to understand the distribution and not let your latency spike up. That is Yahoo's Peanuts. HBase and Cassandra, which are some other alternative shared nothing databases, they do something pretty similar for bulk loading, wherein they try to do offline tablet constructions. The obvious disadvantage is they do not have a rollback mechanism built into them, because obviously it wasn't written for that scenario. Finally, search systems. We're pretty similar to what the original MapReduce paper's use case was, which is build an index offline and pull it over. So that was another related work. Finally, to end my talk, I want to throw some numbers. We've been serving about 120 odd stores in production for the past 2 years. This caters to around 30 odd data products, data features that we have on our site. I've shown about 6 at the start. Every day, we pull about 4 terabytes of data from Hadoop to the live clusters. And we swap about 76 stores every day. So 76 stores every day get new data. And yes, it's open source, fork it, send us patches. We're more than happy to patch it in. Thank you. I'm open for questions. Are people really hungry?
Konstantin Shveshko from eBay. I was wondering how this rollback thing works. Is it just a symlink, or does it, take into account that data is repeating in the new versions, and how much data is that?
So rollback is not just a symlink. We actually close all the memory mapped indexes that we had in the current serving version, and we memory map the ones from the older version, and then we change the symlink. The symlink is just to understand, for the ops people to understand which one is serving right now. As I said, this whole operation is pretty fast, and since you mentioned about usage, rollbacks are really worst-case scenarios. They're not run regularly. It's just like once. If we find a production issue, we'll just roll it back. But it's generally not the use case. Well, we thought like disks are cheap, so why not just store multiple copies of the data? Big deal.
I'll ask a question then. Dan Peek, Facebook. So you said you had lots of products. So I was assuming you have lots of rings. So if you instead of having this data distributed all over the place in small rings, what if you had one large ring? could you then split up the data loading problem to be small enough to be more tractable with a more conventional approach?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a design decision that was taken when Voldemort was started, that to have separate rings per store. In both the scenarios, it will work. There's no difference as such. It's just that probably your rebalancing code might become a little complicated now, because if you want to rebalance only certain stores over to the new nodes that are being added, it'll be a little tough if you have a single ring compared to multiple rings.
Thank you. Let's thank our speaker one last time.